south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Yeah, so let's catch up on those emails I got concerning gold and transporting it back and forth between the U.S. and Latin America. First of all, I have to say everyone should have some gold. Some cash, basically U.S. dollars, because it's the most convertible, even though it is funny money and it's going away sooner or later. And if you doubt that, you do know that every single paper currency that's ever existed has, in the end, gone to zero. Look it up. Do a search. No paper currency has ever sustained itself over the long run. Why? Because paper currency is controlled by lard-ass politicians and bureaucrats who really know nothing about economic theory. All they really know and want is power and to get reelected. And the easiest way to get reelected, because you have to appeal to the masses to get reelected, the little guys, is to offer them benefits and free things. And of course, the kiss of death for a politician is to raise taxes. Though, of course, if they raise taxes on rich people, that's okay. Though rich people always have loopholes. So in order to do all the right things to stay in office, it takes ever-increasing amounts of money, and if you can't tax the shit out of everyone, the only option left is to keep the printing presses rolling. Then you're back to the immutable law of supply and demand. You have ever-increasing amounts of printed cash with no real increase in goods and services. And that, of course, equals inflation. Although some countries have managed to keep their paper currency alive or somewhat alive for a long, long time. 1, 2, or even 300 years, like the British pound and the U.S. dollar. But if you do the math, you'll find they've been devalued beyond recognition. So then how did the Brits and the States keep their funny money going? Well, because, though, since the beginning they had their printing presses running, they've been able to do it year over year and regulated in little drips and drabs. That's always been the plan, producing a couple of percent of inflation year over year for decades and decades. Meanwhile, us dumb lemmings really don't notice it while it's happening. That is, until we look back and see what things used to cost, like when we were kids or in our parents' day. Oh, and by the way, there's always a first step in destroying a currency, and that is to go off the gold or silver standard, meaning your paper money is no longer backed by gold or silver. It's floating. Against what? Well, against other currencies that aren't backed by gold or silver. So that's why there's a market for currency arbitrage, how people make and lose millions each day by betting on one currency against another. However, you know, in the last 3 or 4 months, money printing has not come in drips and drabs. The presses are running at full bore, 24/7. And don't kid yourself. We're seeing the resulting inflation not only in the stock market, but in commodities too, like food. But believe me, you ain't seen nothing yet. And that's why it's kind of a fool's errand to keep a lot of money in a bank. The idea now is to preserve your wealth, preserve what you've got. Now, this is not investment advice, but many people ask me what I do or what I think you should do. And that is, once again, hold enough U.S. cash to get you by for, let's say, 6 months. And if you're flush enough, up to a year. That way you're protected if some really bad crap happens with the banks, ATMs, and hackers. Who knows? We might be looking at bank runs and bank closures. Hey, we're in uncharted territory, so none of that is beyond the realm of possibility. So you need some cash, some U.S. dollars, in bills easily accessible around the house, not in a bank. And then have maybe 20% of your assets in gold and silver. Gold, if you move around a lot, and mostly silver, if you're staying put for a long, long time, and have got a good place to store it. Oh, and I never recommend you keep your gold and your silver with one of those outfits that promises to put it in a vault somewhere, even if it's in Singapore, Switzerland, and it's triple guarded. It doesn't matter. It's just like Bitcoin and crypto. Not your keys, not your coins. Not in your house or in your possession. Not your gold and silver. Not really. Oh, and of course, you hear those storage facilities are heavily secured. If something goes wrong, you're covered. Yeah, right. I found out about insurance companies when I had a house in Montserrat. In the 80s, it got leveled by a volcano. Never was an eruption before, but it blew and wiped out half the island and all the properties. And I was heavily insured, but guess what? They didn't pay out because there were so many claims, the insurer went bankrupt, and the reinsurer went bankrupt too. Yep, they were glad to take my premiums every year. So as you may have guessed, I'm no fan of property insurance companies. Aside from that, I have arguments with expats and gringos about holding gold and silver. I get the same questions all the time. Which is better, gold or silver? Should you hold both? Should you hoard it in the States and hide it? Should you bring it with you to Latin America once you get your plan B going? Now, as for gringos and expats who have some gold or silver, I'd say about half of them who've got a pretty good amount. I'm talking over maybe 10 ounces of gold. That'd be around 20 grand these days. Or a bag of $1,000 face value American junk silver coins, worth over 20 grand these days, too. They tell me how they bought it from some reputable online gold and metals dealer. And there are a lot of good ones. Then there's always people like me who bought their gold and silver at pawn shops or directly at a coin store or coin show. The problem is most of the online gold and silver outfits steer you towards buying them and then holding them in some kind of triple secure vault. Again, I absolutely do not believe in holding your gold and silver outside of your own reach. Not at all. And safety deposit boxes, those are the worst places to keep your gold and silver or any precious metal like palladium, platinum, whatever. Because now almost all first world countries have passed laws saying they no longer permit you to have gold or silver in their bank vaults. Which, by the way, completely negates the idea of a safety deposit box now, doesn't it? Duh. What's left to put in there? Your moldy diplomas? Your soon-to-be-worthless stock certificates? Your latex undies and sex toys? My advice? Banks altogether. Oh, and banks and private safety deposit companies do go out of business, you know. Then what? They don't announce it, you know. Result? You just get totally screwed. I was a personal witness to it. Way back when I was living in Costa Rica, my lawyer told me about a very secure private safety deposit company. It wasn't affiliated with a bank. It was a private company with gringo and European partners in a private building. And in its glossy brochures in English, they talked about how it was the best possible place to store your precious metals. Sound familiar? So back then, being 30 years dumber than I am today, my Costa Rican lawyer took me down there, and man, that place was like Fort Knox. It could practically survive taking a direct hit from a nuke. Only problem was, my lawyer called me up one day and said, "Johnny, you better empty out your box. They're going bankrupt." And I did, and 2 months later I drove by and the place was boarded up. And you know, there's two messages to that story. One, don't ever use a safety deposit company or any safety deposit box. Always have your stuff with you and accessible. And number two, you got to personally bond with a good lawyer and make him your friend. Because down here in Latin America, at least, it makes all the difference between you getting a heads up on things that are coming down the pipe versus people who read about some kind of calamity like that in the morning paper. So a lawyer saved my ass in Costa Rica. And my lawyer in Guatemala has given me a heads up on a few things that saved me a lot of grief, too. So don't think for 1 second your lawyer is just a plain old guy you go to make a will or get something notarized. Those guys really do have the pulse on what's happening in the local business and financial community, too. Oh, and speaking of why it's so important to have some gold, silver, and crypto, and some cash in U.S. dollars outside the banking system, here's some news that'll probably shock you that just came out on Tuesday. This is from a Latino business journal out of Panama. It says, Chile, considered the top most stable, reliable, safe, and educated and settled of Latin countries, just announced in an emergency government media message that Banco Estado, the biggest bank in Chile, had a cyber attack on Sunday. Now, of course, that's not unusual. Almost every bank has had a few cyber attacks. They fight them off, and when they take some losses, they don't tell you about it. That would be bad PR, and the public would lose faith and confidence, so they absorb it. But get this, they're now calling this cyber attack on Banco Estado in Chile an operational banking crisis, with all 12,000 of their bank's computers infected. And as a result, the following Monday morning, that was the 7th of September, they closed every single branch in the country, with the whole thing reminding people of what happened in Argentina many times. When there's a currency crisis, there's a run on banks, or banks just close down for a while. So how would you like to find out that, let's say, you had $50,000 in a bank, and suddenly they shut every bank in the country down? Would that scare the crap out of you? Anyway, the article says the president of Banco Estado, Sebastián Sichel, apologized to the bank's millions of clients and users. That's millions. Inconvenienced by the bank's total shutdown. Then it says many of the more than 13 million clients of the bank were shocked when they saw for the first time in history the entire banking chain closed, with the bank's president appearing on various social media channels to calm the population. Then the article goes on to say Banco Estado is now pointing to computer sabotage, considering the type of malware that's infected the system. They're now saying that the banking branches will be opened one by one, with all of them hopefully being opened by the end of the month. That's 2 weeks from now. Yeah, right. Isn't that a great wake-up call and why you shouldn't have too much dough stuck in a bank for too long? Now, of course, that's got nothing to do with the bank being insolvent. It's all about hackers. Though, as mentioned in a previous show, many astute expats will buy 30, 60, or 90-day certificates of deposit and keep rolling them over as long as things remain stable. I'm mentioning this because, according to banking officials, holders of CDs are always the people that get paid out first, and that's a good thing. Bottom line, as financial systems crumble worldwide, we'll certainly be seeing more and more of this stuff down the pike. Oh, and by the way, when people hear that the average inflation rate for a year is around 2%, that's a normal target for first world countries, or so people think. 2% doesn't seem to bother anyone. That's just a tiny little dollop, right? Well, you know, earlier I was talking about how first world countries like the U.S. have been able to print more money each year, causing an inflation rate of around 2%, and they've been doing that for the last 100 or so years. But the reality is that inflation at even 2% a year will, in the long run, destroy a country's currency. Take the U.S. with a 2% target. Because of that, and running bigger and bigger deficits, the U.S. dollar has lost 97% of its value in the last 100 or so years. In other words, what you could buy for 3 cents back in 1920 costs you a dollar today. That means 3 cents back in World War I would buy what a dollar does today. Looking back, it's terrible to consider. People just don't want to believe it. But the inflation came in such tiny drips and drabs at an average of 2% per year rate. For people living in the present, like watching paint dry on a wall, you just don't notice. But, you know, in a world that's backed by a gold or silver standard, 0% inflation is the only appropriate target. That's why countries had to dump the gold standard. Because to have one, it requires fiscal discipline and responsibility. On a gold standard, budgets must be balanced. You can't spend more than you take in. You can't print any more money than the worth of your gold reserves in the national vaults. And that's why way back when it was so politically expedient to dump the gold standard. Because that's the only way to keep the printing presses rolling. And the consequence of that is always inflation. It can't be avoided. It's a law of nature. Though it can be delayed and diverted into areas like the stock market and real estate, where it does nothing but cause a big bubble that eventually will burst. And when it does, it bleeds off into every other market. That's when the real pain of inflation starts. And we're seeing it right now in food, aren't we? Just wait. You ain't seen nothing yet. All right, so what to do, if you're up in the States now, about investing in gold and silver? Well, that's a very good thing, and I'm all for doing it. The problem is getting that stuff down to Latin America once you get that plan B underway and far enough along so that you've got a place to store it. Oh, and as far as storing it within reach, around the house or your apartment, etc., it would be kind of foolish for me to mention it here on the air because then everyone will know my best hiding places. However, that kind of stuff, and plenty of other things that are not for public dissemination, we talk a lot about at the Expat Insider Seminar. So those of you who come down are going to hear all those tips, along with many other things we don't want the world to know, so we don't talk about them on this podcast. Oh, and of course, we can discuss that stuff too in a pre-scheduled, encrypted one-on-one phone call. So keep that in mind. Oh, and here's a tip. You should be able to get at your gold and silver and that little stack of cash in your house or property in less than 5 minutes. That way, if there's any kind of emergency, you could just grab it and run. Though, if you have, like a lot of people do, one of those $1,000 face value bags of junk silver, that'd be quarters, dimes, half dollars, and silver dollars, pre-1964, whose face value stamped on all those coins adds up to $1,000. Well, a sack like that weighs something like 60 pounds. Very difficult to haul around, or hide, for that matter. Now, it's true that most gringos and expats who finally make it down here, they leave a certain group of friends and relatives back in the States. And more than a few of them have told me they've left some of their gold and silver with relatives and friends. Nicely hidden away, of course. Though, like detectives will always tell you, the best criminals in the world never get caught. Mostly because they do everything alone. They don't have a partner. And they keep their mouths shut. They don't talk to anyone about it. Same thing goes for valuables like gold and silver. If you're going to leave a sack or two behind with your aunt, uncle, or mother, you are creating a kind of a weak link there in the system. It's a matter of confidence and trust. But that said, many expats do exactly that. They bring or buy a lot of gold when they get down to Latin America. And they leave their bags of silver, the heavy stuff, back in the States with someone. A trusted someone. Generally, that means not your ex. Then you might ask, why have silver at all if it weighs so damn much? Why not just stick with gold? Well, you could do that, except there's this thing called the gold-silver ratio that historically sat between 15 and 20 to 1. That means 15 or 20 ounces of silver would equal, historically, 1 ounce of gold. And that ratio has remained true for the past 1,000 or more years. A tremendous, well-grounded historical timeline. But today, for some odd reason, or in the last few years anyway, that gold-silver ratio has been between 70 and 100, way out of whack in favor of gold. That means the historical ratio should balance soon enough. And when it does, silver will outperform gold by 300 to 500%, 3 to 5 times. That's why so many people, expats and such in the know, are hedging their bets and not only buying gold, but some silver too. Sure, it's a good idea, but my advice is to never try to get it down here to Latin America. It's just too damn bulky and heavy. And since when you ship stuff down, you usually pay by the weight, the shipping charges will kill you. And there's a good chance when it goes through customs, you'll get hit with a 30% duty on present value, too. I know a few cases where that's happened myself. My advice, if you have silver up in the States, leave it with somebody. Or if you've got some property up there, hide it yourself. Or sell it and rebuy once you get down here. Again, I know some great places to stash this stuff, but I'm not going to mention it here. Then, when you arrive in Latin America, after you've made a few connections, you could always buy some silver down here because there is a market. People sell that stuff online, gold too, and on Latin-style Craigslists like OLX.com. Not to mention, every Latin country has a bunch of gringo fake book groups, of which I take no part in at all. I don't believe in Facebook, nor Twitter, or Instagram. But there are some very active fake book gringo expat groups who use fake book to advertise and buy and sell practically anything. Including, yes, gold and silver. Now, if you have gold up in the States, and I always prefer U.S. gold, 1 ounce coins, and Canadian maple leaves. Never, never bullion, because you can't test it for yourself and see that it's real. By the way, the question came up on one of those gold and silver emails I read on the last show. The emailer said he couldn't find a ping test app for his iPhone. Well, just go on YouTube, put in ping test for gold and silver. You'll see all kinds of apps come up for PC, Android, and iPhone. And if you can't find a good one for iPhone, just borrow someone's Android phone for 5 minutes, plug in the app and check your metals. Or download one of those ping apps into your PC and use that to test your gold and or silver. And again, as for silver, I always recommend junk silver. It's real U.S. coinage from before 1964. So it's absolutely impossible to counterfeit. And it's recognizable everywhere. Whereas there are lots of counterfeit 1 ounce silver and gold bullion coins out there. And ingots, that's why you need to do a ping test. Oh, and they call it a ping test because that's the sound it makes when you hit the edge of the coin with your finger or an eraser, whatever. So again, my advice when you're buying silver, buy junk silver in the bag. So again, you don't want to bring silver across borders. It's too heavy and difficult. But you can bring some gold. However, you are limited by that $10,000 reporting requirement when you get to the airport. So that means right now, you can bring approximately 5 1-ounce gold coins with you. But in reality, I'd stick with 4. Because if you do get stopped and searched and questioned by those slovenly TSA goons, and if you have spare cash on you, and you will if you're traveling, if your cash plus the gold coin amount goes over $10,000, they'll take it all. Yep, they add the total amount of your cash and metals. Oh, and before gold took off to around $2,000, which was just this year, you did have a leg to stand on by going strictly by the $50, the $50 that's stamped on every 1 ounce U.S. and Canadian gold coin.
I mean, really, would the U.S. government lie? Don't answer that. So they're stamped $50. Really, what it means is the government's admitting they've created massive inflation because an ounce of gold's around $2,000 now. And now that everyone and his mother's aware of that fact, I wouldn't try to use the $50 a coin argument, not anymore. However, in the past, you could carry, let's say, 20 one-ounce U.S. American Eagles through customs at the airport, and if stopped, point out each coin is stamped $50. That argument did work some time ago. I know gringos and expats who used it. But now, since everyone knows the United States is completely broke and bankrupt, with the funny money printing presses running day and night, U.S. authorities, especially tax revenue authorities, are looking for every way to gouge you. In fact, grabbing gold, silver, cash, and valuables at the airport is very lucrative for the U.S. government. In fact, last year in 2019, Homeland Security seized over $2 billion with a B dollars in cash, gold, and other valuables at U.S. airports. So, as it says on the customs and duties form, do you have more than $10,000 in cash or negotiable instruments? Let's say you're going through customs and have the equivalent of $50,000 in gold and cash. And you don't hide it. You declare it on the form. Well, here's what'll happen next. They'll pull you into a little room and ask you to prove where you got all that stuff. You'll have to have documentation and receipts saying that you purchased it legitimately with your taxable earnings. They'll want you to trace all that stuff back to its origin. And if you can't do that, to their satisfaction, they'll keep it. So in a way, it all depends on the attitude of the particular lard-ass bureaucratic customs and immigration slug. Believe me, you don't want to be in that position. Even if the law's on your side and you're following the rules precisely, listing the true value of the cash and the gold you're carrying over $10,000, the jerk that's reviewing your papers still could be having a bad day and just confiscate your stuff. And to get it back, you'll have to go to court. Believe me, you don't want to be in that position. So my advice, take no more than 4 1-ounce gold coins on the airplane with you. Even at $2,000 apiece today, you won't have to report that. But do watch out. You shouldn't be carrying any more than $2,000 in regular bills either. If it adds up to more than $10,000, you'll be doing the 100 question things and will surely miss your flight and probably get your dough and your gold confiscated too. So what should you do? Well, a lot of smart, astute gringos and expats will sell their gold up in the States or hide it if they've got a property to hide it in and just start buying more when they get down to their final destination here in Latin America. So then what do you do if you're just renting a place or you're at an Airbnb and you brought some gold down with you? What do you do if you got no place to hide it? Well, that's an easy one. You give it to your trusted lawyer. That's another reason you have to use the same lawyer for most anything and consider him your friend, because he will hold your gold, your suitcases, your boxes of books, your Hummels, and your grandma's doilies. Yep, Latin American lawyers will do that, and they usually won't charge you a thing because you are a good gringo client. Gringos are the most valued clients of all. In fact, over the years, I've worked with a number of lawyers, and every single one of them held stuff like that from me for long periods of time, and I never had a single problem or complaint. Lawyers are different down here. Talk about full service and going above and beyond the call of duty. Most Latin lawyers will do that for their gringo clients. Though probably not for their Latino clients, but for their gringo clients, and for good reason. Unlike Latino clients, we generally do what we say. Our handshake is our bond. We pay up front and we pay our bills on time. And we show up for our appointments, usually early, even when our lawyer is 2 hours late. That's normal mañana time for lawyers here in Latin America. I remember my German mom used to say, if you're not 10 minutes early, you're late. Yeah, well, you know, not in Latin America. So again, don't be afraid to ask your Latin lawyer to hold things for you. The fact is, my seminar lawyer, who I've known for over 20 years now, he's been holding things for certain seminar guys for 5, 6, even 7 years now. That's why, by the way, you don't want to find a lawyer by throwing a dart at the yellow pages. Yep, they still exist out here. And believe me, you don't want to get an introduction to a Latin lawyer from a sunburned, greasy-haired, gringo-gone native you met in the bathroom at an expat bar wet t-shirt contest. You have to get better references than that. All right, so that's my take on gold and silver. But I also say it's extremely important to get yourself some cryptocurrency, one of the top ones, like Bitcoin, which is considered the gold standard for crypto. And of course, there are hundreds of shitcoins out there, and there's DeFi, all kinds of tokens and lending platforms. It's very confusing, except when you're talking about Bitcoin.
everyone in the space knows that's the coin you should be accumulating in the end. In other words, all roads lead to Bitcoin because there's only going to be 21 million of them produced. So then what's the best way to go about accumulating it? Well, it's been around a little more than 10 years now. And if you pull out the whole chart over the last 10 years, you'll find that 97% of the people who bought Bitcoin are in the black right now. They're in the money. Only 3% of people who bought in are losing money right now. And they were the ones that bought in during that peak couple months during the winter of 2017. Meanwhile, everyone else who bought in the past 10 years is in the black. And what I suggest, take it or leave it, is that you do one simple thing. Buy on the dip, meaning when there is a big drop in price, that's when you want to get in and buy. Of course, there's a risk. There's a risk to everything. But the way the financial system's crumbling, well, the phoenix that rises out of the ashes will have a crypto component. So it's my feeling and the feeling of so many people smarter than I am that if you just have one Bitcoin, just one, it's got a value of around 10,000 to 11,000 right now. Well, according to people a lot smarter than I am, if you have just one Bitcoin and hold on to it for a year or two or at the most five, it could very well be your entire retirement plan. That's what I've been hearing from a lot of my very smart expat friends who pretty much have been living 24/7 in the crypto space. They've been right so far. Man, have they been right so far. So in the end, it's a great idea to have some cash enough to last 6 months to a year. In case all hell breaks loose, shit hits the fan, and you can't get money out of the banks or the ATMs anymore. Along with that, it's nice to have a stash of gold, possibly silver, and crypto, even if it's only one Bitcoin. And in the end, you should be looking at buying some land, a homestead, a condo, a penthouse, whatever, in a Latin American jurisdiction. That way, it's completely non-confiscatable. But remember, even in Latin America, it's location, location, location. There are some fantastic places to buy property, but you have to have adequate boots on the ground to suss that stuff out. But don't worry, those of you coming to my January Expat Insider Seminar will be getting a hell of a crash course on real estate regarding how to position yourself to best advantage in this imploding real estate bubble. Oh, and the seminar's 4 months away and it's already half filled, so time to get off the fence and get ready to drink from the fire hose. Just go to expatplanb.com and click on the seminar link for full details and how to kill two birds with one stone, that is, get your Guatemala residency started at the very same time. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.